don't have that, you can ask Cartman. He'll tell you year, date, country, where, what continent is this country, and who's the prime minister, who's the president. Out of 195 flags of the world, he can name 190 just by looking at the flags.
Oh my gosh. This is the Unspecial Podcast. I'm joined today with Daniela. Daniela is a mom to Carmen. They have a great following on Instagram. And what drew me in to follow you and see all that you're up to with Carmen is I love seeing autistic kids just living life and experiencing life just as everyone else. And from all your travels and everything you do with them, seems like an awesome guy, and you seem like an awesome mom. So wanted to have you on. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Yeah. So Daniela recently, for all the listeners, put out a post, and she posed the question of, if you would have known that your kid would have autism, would you still have your kid? And I'm super interested. Where are you coming from with that?
It was late night, and I'm like, it's one of those questions where I'm like thinking, should I put it out? Shouldn't I put it out? Am I going to get a lot of hate? You know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, whatever, just go for it. At this point, I don't care. Let me just go for it. So I put the question out, and I wanted to be clear that I love my son, and I'm here right. for him until I can be, but it is a loaded question.
Definitely.
So I actually reviewed all the comments this morning. There was like 150 comments, there was only 20 that said no. They wouldn't do this journey again if they had the choice. And it's a loaded question because it comes from parents, different journeys of parents that have different children on the spectrum, right? So when Carmen was diagnosed, he's 24 now. 21 years ago when he was diagnosed, they weren't giving out levels for autism. So now there's level 1, 2, and 3. They weren't doing that back then. It was like, he's autistic. That's it. And then also there was the diagnosis of Asperger's, which was done at, if you were noticing a change in your child at 6 years old, rather than at 18 months. So he was just diagnosed autistic, but now they're giving levels out. So everyone has like a different level. And I think obviously your journey is going to be different, whether your child is profoundly autistic or just on the border.
Right. And I think that's where a lot of confusion lies in society, is that spectrum. And I taught profound autism for 7 years. So I gravitate towards that side of the spectrum because that's what I knew. That's what I experienced. It's an intense question because parents' journeys are much different than other parents, especially on that profound side. My students were all non-speaking and violent. So, you know.
What ages were they? Were they younger?
I taught all levels, but yeah, my last 4 years was high school and adult transition.
Okay, so they were older. They weren't just children.
Right. So, I mean, it was pretty sketchy at some days. There was some pretty intense situations.
Yeah. But I have to say, with this journey, I understand my son more and more as he gets older. And a lot of parents, I think, with the answers to that question, a lot of parents, they didn't say no because they didn't love their child or they weren't invested in their child. They said no because of their child's future without them.
Right. Is that the biggest fear that you see?
Fear of autistic parents, autism parents, is the biggest fear of what's going to happen to my child when I'm not here. The biggest.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the fear is this world is not ready for our children because of the acceptance and the awareness. Right? You meet one autistic child, as I say, you meet one, you don't know of the next one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, the inclusivity is not there.
Right. It's an intense question. I mean, it made me think. I don't have any children that have autism. I do have an 8-month-old now, and he was born at 29 weeks. At wow. 25 weeks, we found out my wife has cancer. So he stayed in for four more weeks. But we did get the question from the doctors that every day he comes out early, he runs more risk of developmental challenges. And they did oppose that we could abort, which quickly our answer was no. And then they also, they ran through all the risks, and hearing it, I was in my mind, I'm like, well, if there's anybody qualified to have this kid, it's me. And so my answer in that moment was no. But it's always like, okay, 20 years down the road, would it be the same answer? If I mean, he's showing normal developmental signs right now, but
I'm
I don't know.
To hear that. How's your wife?
She's doing much better. Yeah, good. She's doing. It's been like 10 months now, and signs are it's going well. So very hopefully. Good.
So your son is 10 months old, or how old is your son?
He's 8 months. Yeah.
Yeah, familiar with having a preemie too. My first son, Lucas, was born 7 weeks early. He was like 4 pounds.
Oh, see? Wow. Yeah.
And even though they're preemie, they catch up.
Yeah. He's I think he's like 18 pounds now. He was 3 when he was born.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Very good. Wild.
So perfect. Can you walk us through the moment when you first suspected autism with Carmen?
So he was about at that 18-month mark, almost 2, where I didn't suspect anything. I was more of the parent where, you know what, let's just give him some time. Because he wasn't typical. Like, he wasn't rocking, and he wasn't, yes, he had lost any words he had. He was very poker face, not as much eye contact, but I was the one who said, you know what, let's give him some more time, where my husband was like, no, there's something wrong with him. My husband noticed it before I did. So we reached out to our region, and they had an intake for getting diagnosis. At the same time, while you're waiting for the diagnosis, they had some courses for parents to take, because back then there was no social media. There was, you wanted to know about something, you were going to the library.
Yeah.
Or jumping into some old encyclopedias you had at the bottom of your basement, or a doctor. There was nothing to know about autism. It was like, what is autism? The only thing I knew was like Rain Man.
Right.
That's like autism. Oh, Rain Man. And I'm like, but he's not like Rain Man. He's different. So, with the lack of resources, we didn't know what we were dealing with. So we got him diagnosed. We luckily got him into a program, an ABA therapy program. So he got ABA for 7 years.
Oh, wow.
Full-time ABA with the region, which we were lucky to, because that's when the boom was starting. And the wait lists were long.
Oh, wow.
Were long, okay, to get your child into therapy, paid therapy, rather than if you had to do it yourself, you're looking at $80,000 a year. And this was like 22 years ago, like $80,000 a year. How long, how many years can you do it for? Like, how many years can you remortgage your home? Like, you know, to get that money, right? So we were lucky that we pushed and we pushed for him to get therapy. And the ABA therapy actually taught him his life skills and his social skills, but it didn't teach him how to read or write. So that was another thing.
Yeah. How old is he now?
He just turned 24.
24. Okay. And he was, how old is he when he diagnosed?
About 3.
Okay.
3, almost 4, in his 3rd year.
So you jumped on it pretty quickly. Walk me through the emotional toll. What was it like receiving that diagnosis and just kind of the unknown, especially since it was 22 years ago?
I wasn't sad. I think what my approach is in life is very positive. It's a half glass full, always, never empty. So I'm like, okay, we're gonna go ahead with this. I didn't know. I didn't. My husband took it worse than me, but I didn't know what we were looking at, so I didn't jump on the sad train. I think, as I said in one of my posts, I talk a lot about is I was on a mission to fix him. Okay, we're gonna fix him. What can we do to fix his autism, to fix him and make him be typical? I didn't. Did I lose you there? We're good?
Yeah, no, I'm here.
Okay. I was on a mission to fix him. So I didn't realize until probably like 5 years ago, so he was 18, 19, that I wasn't gonna fix, we weren't gonna fix him. This is who he is. The autism, it's not going away. You can't get rid of autism. And I learned that later on in life. But what happens is the person gets better with it. They learn to live with it. They learn to what they call masking. So their little quirks or their repetitive things, whatever they do, they leave it at home. And when they're out in the community, they learn to mask it. Because for my son now, who is eagerly looking for friends, he missed that friend thing back in high school because he wasn't ready for friends. He didn't understand friends. So now, later in life, he wants friends. But he also understands that getting friends when he's talking to himself or when he's repeatedly walking back and forth, he's not approachable, right? Socially, people are like, what is wrong with this guy? So he tries to hide that in public. And when he gets home, that's when he does his repeated talking or his walking back and forth or whatever he does to regulate himself.
Do you think that the masking is beneficial for him, or what's your thoughts around masking? I know there's a little controversy on it, and
Well, I hear from other people I follow that are older as well, it's exhausting. It's really exhausting for them. It's really, and it's like there's mental illness, and then right now I don't classify autism as mental illness. I don't classify it as depression or whatnot, but they can be. Like Carmen does have depression. He's on meds for that as well. And he has anxiety, which he's on meds for that. But I right now I'm not thinking autism isn't a mental illness. It's just who you are. Right? And then the big talk about vaccines. That's the big, like, you don't even want to get into that.
Well, we've got to do a couple times with a couple guests. I mean, do you want to get into it?
Well, yeah, actually, I've been and now with the with Robert F. Kennedy, who's opened up a whole big can of worms and actually divided our community ever since he did those couple of those conference, those news conferences. I think, me personally, I think autism, it's like you have autism is like Alzheimer's. In this life, you're gonna come in with you're gonna come with autism, or you're gonna go out with Alzheimer's. It's one or the other. And autism has a lot to do. Are they born with it? I think autism has to do with genes, your genes. And it's like having genes, the same thing as cancer genes. The same thing with Alzheimer's gene. We all have these genes. Whether they turn on or off is based on environmental factors, based on food, all the GMO, based on many different factors that will turn these genes on and off. Me, I think for vaccines, I'm gonna lean towards because I've heard so many times vaccines do not cause autism. I've heard of twins, two twins, identical twins that were born. One has autism, one doesn't. They're identical twins. They carry the same. Like, why wouldn't both of them? I think autism, I think vaccines don't cause autism, but I think the vaccine schedule is also too much on these little bodies.
Yeah.
Which maybe if that was spaced out, it would make a difference. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know.
I know. It's kind of, there's a lot of views. You know, something that, on the vaccine topic, something that I've always, from teaching and having guests on the podcast, parent testimonials have always sat strong for me, because I don't know how you ignore a parent. And, you know, which I think a lot, especially on the profound autism side, parents are ignored a lot, which is essentially why I started this podcast, because I saw when I was going through so many IEP meetings that the parents didn't have a voice, and there's so many services and everything geared towards the child, which is good. It's necessary and needed, but I was experiencing parents just not having the support and having the voice to share their story, and especially in the IEP meetings. I could go on for a while about that, but all the experts are in the room and the parent doesn't have a space to talk, which the parent is the most important person at that table. So yeah, parent testimonials. I mean,
I think, who knows? Yeah. Also the parent, also the profound autism part, ever since Kennedy started speaking, is that they have felt left out. And ever since now, it's in this past year where they've grouped the autism under one umbrella, right? Where they used to have Asperger's, and then they had autism, and then they had PDD, pervasive development disorder, which is just before autism. And now they grouped that, and the numbers got higher because they grouped it. But people didn't understand that they grouped it, and people saw an increase in autism. Oh my God, we have an autism epidemic. Well, no, my take is that because we grouped them all together, you're going to see a bigger number now. And they also grouped the profound autism within that umbrella. And I know I've heard parents pushing now to actually have their own umbrella for profound autism, to take it out of the autism thing. Because, I mean, there's like... there's, you know, so many different people with autism, ones that speak, one that don't speak, one that are aggressive, one that, I mean, there's so many things, but I hear that parents with profound autism are wanting to have their own label.
Why do you think there is a divide? Or better question, what do you think the perception of autism is in the world? Is it accurate?
I think it's hard to be accurate because there's so many different, there's so many different abilities that people have who are autistic, right? The ones that can't talk, the one that can talk. Carmen, and I always tell a parent when I meet them, when their child is younger, that your child will do things when they're ready, right? If they're not ready to talk, they're not going to talk. Where Carmen lost all his words at 3 years, but he started saying words here and there when he was 5.
Okay.
And he wasn't conversational until he was in his late teens. Conversational, where he kept up the conversation, not that I had to push him for the words. Uh-huh. Right? And now we find out that he is so, we say he's knowledgeable because he doesn't like to be called smart. We say he's knowledgeable. And he's my Google. You don't have that. You can ask Carmen. He'll tell you year, country, what continent is this country in? Who's the prime minister? Who's the president? Out of 195 flags of the world, he can name 190 just by looking at the flags.
Oh my gosh.
And we didn't know this when he, a few years ago, we didn't know this. He was like this.
Yeah. So that's huge for all the listeners. That's such a big encouragement to just keep moving forward one step at a time.
Keep pushing them. Keep, you know, teaching them. But I say when their brain is ready, they will be ready. You can't push it if they're not ready.
No,
And
that's
that's where
great.
the parent disappointment comes in, because you're like, when is he going to do this? When is he going to talk? And when he's going to learn how to eat on his own? When it's when they're ready. Of course, you need to keep encouraging it, but it's when they see it.
Yeah. So how was the school, all the school days, the school process for Carmen?
So he did elementary and he finished high school. He got actually 3 more years in high school, because children with special needs get 3 more years in high school.
Yeah.
But he graduated with a certificate, not a diploma. And because we didn't know, he wasn't ready. Like, we didn't know he was so knowledgeable. When he finished, he didn't learn how to read or write. And when he got out of ABA therapy when he was younger, they told us he's never going to read or write. But he learned how to read and write with a fabulous teacher that he had in grade 3.
Oh, wow.
He learned how to read or write. Now I'm like, Carmen, how do you spell this? He's like, whatever. He tells me how to spell it. But we didn't know what he was, you know, able to do until later in life. So school for him and for me was like, just make sure he has a happy day. You know,
right,
just make
right.
sure he's good. If he learns something, that's a bonus. But just make sure he has a happy day. That was my approach for him on school. And yes, we had IEPs every, is it 4 months or 3 months? I don't remember now. Every 4 months, you get an IEP and you got to go review that with the teachers. And my was like, yeah. Just, well, yeah. As long as he's happy and safe, we're good, right?
Yeah.
If he learns something, it's a bonus. And I have to say that we didn't know how he was doing in school. We only knew from the teachers, right? But that was a teacher's perspective. Carmen wasn't able to tell us if he was having a good or bad day. He always wanted to go. It wasn't until this year that I learned he was being bullied.
Oh.
Where I just, a parent asked me, can you do a reel, a video about bullying? Because my daughter's really like getting bullied really bad. So if you can like shed some light on that. So I actually just had to sit down with Carmen. I said, Carmen, were you like bullied? Were people teasing you in high school? And he's like, yes, there was people who would make fun of me, walk behind me and imitate me. And then I would tell them to stop and I would chase them around the school and they thought it was funny.
Wow.
And at the time, he wasn't able to tell me that. He wasn't able to tell a teacher that either. So really, nobody knew but him and the kids that were teasing him.
Wow. So he held that for some time. I mean, what do you know? What grade he was being bullied in, or just all throughout?
It was high school. It was high school.
Okay.
It was high school's like probably grade 10, 11.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
We recently had a guest on Colin, and he was bullied. He has autism. He was bullied, but he trained jiu-jitsu. So one time he was being bullied. And he just took the guy down and showed him what's up. Gained some respect.
That's right. That's right. Where, yeah, Carmen wasn't aggressive a lot. He just had, his aggression came because he couldn't get the words out. And he wanted to talk. And that's, I think, that's where aggression comes from mainly, too. I think with everybody, it was, they just cannot express themselves.
Yeah. And I mean, if you think of it, in like logical terms, we would do the same thing. I'd always tell my staff in class when they would be frustrated that, you know, kids, students were getting violent. I'd be like, imagine if you couldn't say anything. Like, you, I would do the same thing. So we got to just put ourselves in their shoes and work with them and just understand we're not that different.
And that's what I learned this year, actually, too. You got to step into their world.
Right.
That's right. To understand them, you need to step into their world, because there's always a reason for the behavior in anybody that does anything. There's always a reason for the behavior.
Yeah. So what does a typical day look like? You guys just got back from a travel to New York.
We went to New York for a couple of days. Carmen loves New York. And it's funny because Carmen does not like busy places. So he's very situational in different places. But he loves New York and he loves pizza. I think out of 2 days, we had pizza 5 times. You gotta do the math. It was like pizza and walking, you know? You
Yeah,
gotta do the
that's
math.
great.
There's a math to that one. But he loves New York, very, very busy, but he doesn't mind it at all. Where he was the kid that as soon as he saw a live big character, like let's say Mickey Mouse in a character, he would run away. Now he's like he's good with it. He's learned to cope with it. He's learned that, oh mom, that's just a person in there. That's not just a big Barney person. What, you know, that's not real Barney. So but he loves New York. He loves he likes to travel because we have kept it consistently.
Okay.
Right? It's like, I think you have to keep it consistent. You have to keep a schedule. You got to keep on doing it for them to like it. Like for example, movies. Carmen didn't go to his first movie until last year. He went to the movies the first time when he was 23 years old because he couldn't bring himself to go to a movie theater. It was too loud, too dark. It was so many unknowns. Like there was nowhere for him to escape. Like if he had to escape and yet he felt he was trapped. So the first time he actually brought himself to see a movie was last year. Loved it. And I think in 6 months we saw like 25 movies. I'm like, okay, I'm done with movies.
So great. So
yeah.
It seems though like every new experience you introduce him to, and maybe there's a little bit of pushback, but as you're consistently continue
right.
to experience life with him, he adapts and ends up liking it.
Right. Like if we don't go in a movie, if we don't go to a movie within like a year, the next time we go to a movie, he will have an issue with it. He will need some pushing to go to because it hasn't been a regular thing. Like if he doesn't go on a plane flight for a good year, he will get nervous going on the next one. But if we keep it consistent, he's good with it.
Okay. So how about at home now? Is he working or what's his day look like?
So at home, not working yet. We hopefully get him into like, not even just working, but even a volunteer position or something to keep his day busy.
Mm-hmm.
He loves to go to the gym. He works out a lot.
Nice.
That helps him regulate himself. And he also likes to go there because he meets people and says hi to them. And but yeah, he's very self-sufficient now. He wakes up, he makes his own breakfast, he'll make his own lunch. He loves being independent to a certain point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And does he has siblings? He's a brother.
He does. He has an older brother who's 14 months older than him.
Okay.
He lives in Toronto. Yeah.
How was their relationship growing up?
His older brother doesn't really talk about when they were younger.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of the issue of what autism parents have, dividing their time between the autistic sibling and the other ones. Because they take a lot of time from you. Your worry goes on them a lot more than the other one. He seems to be fine with it. I mean, I've asked him and he's like, it's fine. He's very much like me. I'm gonna do what I have to do because I have to do it and I have no choice. And he's helped his brother a lot. He'll come and take his brother out once in a while. But they have a great relationship. Like I remember when Carmen was younger, Lucas knew that he was like getting aggressive or he needed someone to as a punching bag. So he would let Carmen take his arm and squeeze it and squeeze it and squeeze it because he was just at that moment of aggression.
Yeah.
And he was fine with having scars that his brother left him, and he would let him do it to him because he knew it helped his brother. So they're very close, but because they're at different ages now, like Carmen's, like they are only a year apart, but they're not. Right.
Yeah.
So they're at different steps in life.
Yeah. What advice would you give to that? Balancing your time and your energy and care from one child to the next.
I think if I had to do it all again, like being a parent and life was very much different back then when Carmen was younger. Right. We were struggling with money, bouncing between jobs, so much different than life is now. So I think it's like you're just learning, you're trying to survive life. So I think now if I had to do it again, I would include my older son more in, mm-hmm. in caring for and helping with Carmen. If I had to go back there, like I would let him come with me to, you know, therapy with Carmen, or I would, like, instead of me doing things for Carmen, maybe I would include Lucas in helping him. I think that would bring them closer together, because they're not as close as I'd like them to be now, but mm-hmm. that's something you can't push.
Right.
You can't push that. And also, I think that gives parents a hope for the future, where if your siblings are closer to your, you know, to your child, maybe they're take care of them in the future, right? Because that's what we wonder, what's going to happen to our child in the future? Mm-hmm. Who's going to take care of them? But it's not something you want to push on their siblings. You don't want to push that. You want them to, like, you don't want them to have the mentality, I have to take care of my brother because I just have to. Who else is going to do it? No, that's not what you want. You want them to, you know, do it on their own.
Yeah, that's so good. That's some valuable insight for sure. Just include the siblings.
Include them in the day-to-day so they learn to understand them, and even include them in understanding autism and mm-hmm. learning more about autism and why, and like why they do certain things. What are they needing, you know?
Yeah. What is something you wish society knew about autism, or any misconceptions you'd like to debunk?
What would they know about autism? That first, they do want to be included. Mm-hmm. They do want to be included in everything. And because they, and also what very important is they are listening. You know, they are listening, even though they're not, don't have the eye contact to connect. They are listening, which is very important.
What are some of the biggest challenges you face with the journey you're on?
Well, right now, specifically with Carmen, is he reminds me every day that he says, Mom, I love you, but I need friends. I can't spend all my time with you.
Yeah.
And he's very specific on friends. Like, we have a great following, and our followers are awesome. They're like, oh, I'll be his friend. But he sees friends as, I want them to be around my age, and I want to be able to talk to them face to face. Like, I want to go out with them to the mall, and I want to go out with them to see a movie. And so he wants friends his age. That, and the problem is, people who are in their mid-20s right now, they're like doing things, and like they're working, they're in school, and they're, you know, it's hard. It's like at that age, you're not, you've been through the friendship thing, right? So he's at a different stage of life right now than others are his age.
Yeah.
And it's also hard for us because we travel, he comes with me wherever I go, whether I'm in Toronto or I'm in Cayman, he comes with me back and forth. And it's hard to maintain friendships when you're like hopping around all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's his biggest challenge right now is friendships, wanting to have friends.
What does that do? What does that do to you? Like hearing that from your son, I can't imagine that's easy.
Every day he tells me, he'll remind me because he thinks I forget, right? He'll say, Mom, remember, I still want friends. I'm like, I know you do, Carmen, you know, like,
yeah.
What about you go to the gym and you talk to people, and he says, I try to say hi to them, but I don't want to be creepy, right?
Right.
Right?
Is there any, how do you cultivate some friendships?
And with him, it's difficult because I've gotten a lot of feedback from other people saying, you know, are there any day centers or groups with other autistic special needs people? The thing with Carmen is he's embraced it more now, But he, when he was younger, because he was in what they called community classrooms in school, it was like 6 to 8 kids with different needs, whether they had Down syndrome or aggressive or autism or whatever it was, they were all grouped together in a community classroom. And because Carmen was a bit more social or had a little bit more words than the other ones, there was kids he was with all day that were crying, that were screaming. So he's grouped special needs kids as kids that I don't want to be around because it's just too much for me.
Yeah, makes sense.
He's like, if he's better now, but if we were ever in a grocery store and he saw another autistic child, he'd run. He'd run away because all he remembers is the crying and the screaming of those classrooms he was in. And it's heartbreaking for me because I want him to be inclusive. And at one point, he didn't think he was. He would tell me, "Mom, I'm not like them. I'm not autistic. I'm not like them." Because he didn't do those similar things. But he is like he is autistic, but he doesn't see him like that.
Yeah, that's tough. I wish I could be his friend. Seems like a cool guy.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sure he would love it, but he's like, "Mom, I don't want your friends your age."
Right. Well, hopefully somebody will come through. Someone will be there.
Yeah, for sure. Someone will be. Yeah, but
What
he
are what
won't
are
let me forget it either, so it's okay.
Yeah, one way or another, he'll make it happen. What are
Yes.
some of the joys of raising Carmen?
Oh gosh, seeing life through his eyes is very it's cool.
Yeah, I
He
bet.
doesn't have a bad bone in his body. He advocates for everyone. So now it's Pride Month. He's got his pride wristband on and he advocates for everybody. And he does not like all this stuff. He can't watch the news. He will be so upset. He gets upset for like days on end if he knows about what's going on in the Ukraine. He was actually upset and I had to tell him, "Carmen, it's not even our." So when you guys elected Trump, he was very upset.
Was he?
And I'm like, "Carmen, we're Canadian." But he's mean. He's not good for the. He was upset for days.
Wow.
He gets upset if other people are hurting. Like his worst thing in life, is, "Mom, you're not mad at me, are you? Please don't be mad at me." Or I'll say, at night, because when we're in Toronto, we stay with my parents, and they need their sleep. But Carmen, all of a sudden, he's a night owl sometimes, and he just doesn't stop talking or walking at night. And I'm like, "Carmen, please stop. Your grandfather has to sleep." And he's like, "But I'm not hurting him. I'm not trying to hurt him." He does not want to hurt people. He
Wow.
he's so kind.
Yeah, that's
And
so
that
cool.
seeing light through their eyes is a joy, but it's also disappointment because the world isn't like that.
Right.
Right? And you can't trust everybody, and he thinks he can.
Yeah. Well, even seeing your trip in New York, just to see how he experiences everything, I'm sure is pretty fun. That was one of my favorite parts when I taught adult transition, that 3 years after high school, was taking all my students in the community. And I would just be kind of a fly on the wall and watch them work and go about the grocery store. And just trying to see what they see are seeing and experiencing was always so fascinating to me.
Oh yeah, very fascinating. Carmen loves the grocery store. We go to Walmart and he just goes up and down the aisles and he knows exactly what cereal, if it's Post or Kellogg's, or I can't buy that because I don't want to buy Post stuff. I'm like, "What?"
He knows what he wants.
Oh, he does. He knows. Oh, and his taste buds. Oh well, so that's another thing. Carmen couldn't he lost all his taste. Before 18 months, he ate fruits and vegetables and everything pureed. And all of a sudden, he just stopped eating at 18 months and just wanted milk, milk, milk. And then for the longest time, he just wanted carbs and milk. Now he eats everything, like salmon. He has a specific cuts of steak that he wants. He wants like the good stuff, and he'll notice like he wants homemade stuff and he doesn't want bought hamburgers, and his taste buds are like awesome.
That makes it fun.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And also pizza.
Pizza.
Pizza 24/7.
That's great. How has parenting Carmen changed you as a person?
I'm different through the years because when he was younger, I was just had so much to deal with that I wouldn't want to connect with other people, like other families with autism, because I was living that life, that world, and it was just so much, and it was just too much to handle that at the end of the day, I had to deal with my child. But now that he's grown up,
yeah,
I actually enjoy connecting with other families of autistic people and telling them and try to troubleshoot their issues or why is their child doing this. And I remember when Carmen used to do this, and I love helping other autism families right now, because I have the experience with my son. Gotcha. And he's taught me to be accepting of a lot of things. Mm-hmm. He's really softened me up.
Well, now you have a pretty strong following on Instagram. How long have you been helping out families?
It's going to be 2 years in January that we started our Instagram account.
Okay.
And we were at 1,000 followers for a year. It didn't budge that number, even though whatever I kept on doing.
Really?
But this big following has come now in this past year. Just, I guess, you know, I guess Instagram is, you got to post the right stuff, and you don't know what the algorithm's doing. But one thing I love about it, I get a lot of people saying, you give me so much hope.
Wow.
Hope is what our families are going for now. And like I say, one thing that disappointed me was not having Carmen do the milestones when I wanted him to do milestones. So I have to say, you have to, you know, patience is, and when they're ready, they will do it when they're ready. You can't force it.
Yeah, I'm sure it feels good too, also, just to give back a little bit. And I know hope is everything. That's what everybody's searching for and wanting. And not today, because this recording isn't going to drop for a month, but on June 17th, I wrote a book. It's called Special Days. And it's live at the time of this recording, available on Amazon. But that was my whole goal with Special Days, is stories from my teaching days. And then I relate it back to the Bible and how I saw God through my students. And it was written to parents to encourage and give some hope and different perspective.
Wow.
On just the journey they're on. And so, yeah, hope. Hope is where it's at. That's
yeah,
awesome.
I'm gonna check that out when we're done. And I love reading books. Connecting that way.
Cool. Yeah, it's a short read. I've read it too many times. Writing a book is a process, and by the end of it, I'm just like, just publish it. I can't read this anymore.
Well, me and Carmen have been thinking of writing a cookbook for special needs, because Carmen, you know, he likes to cook. But the thing is, where he's at now, a regular cookbook is just too much to understand, right? Yeah. And if it doesn't have pictures, and if it's written so long, he can use kids' cookbooks.
Okay.
But then again, he's like, but I'm not a kid. And in this journey, we found out there is no cookbooks for children with special needs.
Interesting.
Like, you know, a cookbook with pictures and step by step, and it's there for kids, but it's not there. So you have my son who's 24 using a kid's cookbook. He's like, I'm not a kid.
Huh?
Right?
You definitely should do it.
There's nothing.
Awesome.
We went to the bookstore. We've Amazon. There's nothing that is geared for special needs, you know?
Yeah.
And that would be a great tool for people special needs, right?
Absolutely. So one of my favorite lessons in the classroom was cooking. I had so much fun. And when COVID hit, school shut down. I was teaching in Southern California at that time. And all I could think of doing to engage my students was film cooking shows. So I would film myself cooking. So if you need any video of your recipes, I'll happily.
Yeah, like I'm thinking this cookbook's gonna have like QR codes where you link and you'll see the video of it, of the cooking the recipe actually live doing it. Or yeah, we have a lot of thoughts, but we don't know where to start because I've never written a book. It's just I don't know where to start.
Oh, you just start writing.
Yeah.
It's not
So
as
that's
hard
a
as,
future plan for us.
yeah. No, that'd be so cool. Do it, definitely.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to parents who are just beginning this journey?
Patience. And don't stop advocating. You are the one that's going to get your kids the help they need. And also another big thing that I saw on this was parents that didn't hop on board quick enough. Parents that were in denial. Parents that didn't want their child labeled. That's a big thing. And the longer you wait, the harder it is for your child to get the help they need.
What?
I think, yeah.
Yeah, what's that denial phase? Why do you think your parents go through that?
I think a lot of parents, I think parents just don't see the kids the way they are. And maybe it's their first child. I don't know. Maybe, they don't have anything to base it on. But I've seen a lot of parents go through that. And it's hard. I've had friends who I've like, when you have an autistic child, you kind of learn. And when you are with other autistic people, you know the signs. Right? So as a friend, I would see my friend's child, like, I think they're, but I could never say it. It's something really weird that I could never say, oh, I think your child's autistic, because I know they would get some pushback. But I've seen a lot of families that are in denial and they don't get their kid tested until they're in school, only because a teacher has said something. And a lot of, I don't know where you are there, but a lot of programs end at age 6, right? For ABA therapy, they end at age 6. So if you miss that, you're missing a lot of valuable time that you could have had.
Yeah, I know in the US, services transfer over to the schools at age 3. But there is tons of services like in-home ABA that parents can hire.
Yeah, but they have to pay themselves.
Yeah. Some insurances will cover it, but yeah, most of it's out of pocket.
Yeah. And that's what I saw too when Carmen was younger, because it was such a, like, there were so many numbers of autistic kids coming out that people would be charging an arm and a leg for therapy, like gouging parents. It was horrible.
Oh, because they could.
They could, because it was needed.
That's messed
Yeah.
up. Do you have any regrets? Or what do you wish your past self had known throughout the years?
So I think going back to that question that we started with in the beginning of would I have another autistic child if I knew they were going to be autistic? My answer would be no. I would not. If I knew, I would not. And that's a whole reason why we never had another a third child. Because after having Carmen, we knew that our odds were greater of having another autistic child. And really truly wasn't ready or understanding what life meant with Carmen, because we didn't know a lot about autism, and we chose not to have any more because I didn't want another autistic child. My reason for saying no is because the biggest fear of what parents have now is who's going to take care of them when I'm gone. That's our biggest fear. And also, I know I see Carmen every day, the way he feels that he wants friends and just what he's going through, it's tough on him. It's tough on him. And it's not about me at all. It's not about, I don't think it's not about the parents, because the parents, every parent on that question that I asked, would you have, like, only 20 said no. And the other ones said yes, because like I would never trade in my child. I love them so much. And yes, we all do. That's a, we all do. But my reason for saying no is because they're going through a tough time. They're not, because this world is not ready for them. They they don't, this world does not see what they see.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think, it's not like, that's not wrong to say. I mean, that's valid for sure. And I think
a lot of parents feel ashamed if they say, no, I wouldn't have had my child if I didn't have to. Right. But it's not about that. It's about the life they will be living.
Yeah. And
which isn't fair to them.
Right. And the hardships they go through, especially the non-speaking ones, like being trapped in your thoughts all the time.
Exactly. Like, I cannot imagine, I can't speak for a family that has a non-speaking child.
Mm-hmm.
I can, because Carmen was non-speaking till 5, but then he does speak now. They go through different things. Like, can you imagine if your child wasn't feeling well and they couldn't tell you? Like, you have to troubleshoot that.
Mm-hmm.
Through their behaviors and you know, it's tough.
Yeah, the toll it takes on siblings, the whole deal is...
The toll it takes on even the whole extended family, because you, when you're hoping for, like, help from others, and, you know, parents need a break too, and when they can't find other people that were willing to help them, not because they don't want to, I think it comes from fear of not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not knowing how, like, if you don't know about autism, how do you know what they're crying about? If they can't tell you how they're feeling, you know, it's hard to take care of someone like that. So people say the village, there's no village, you know, when you have a child with special needs, because the ones that do have help are very fortunate, but a lot of people don't, because of fear of the unknown.
Yeah. Did you have community or help along the way?
I did have a very small family, so I did have help with my parents and my husband's mother.
Mm-hmm.
And we did have a lot of help with that, but it wasn't all the time because my parents worked as well. But we went through the first 10 years of our marriage where we did things separately. So if I had to go out, my husband would stay home with the kids. If he had to go out, you know, we would just take turns staying home. And that put a toll on the marriage as well.
Totally.
Like living two separate lives, right? Because one had to stay, one had to go. That was the first 10 years of our lives. So,
what was the big advice on the marriage front and keeping it all together?
Hmm. That's a good question.
Marriage in itself is a challenge, but then you throw in a 24/7 care of a child in the mix for years on years. I hear all the time what other parents say is, you know, communication is everything, staying on the same page, supporting each other.
Therapy. Yeah, I think therapy, you know, if you can't do therapy, like, every so often, therapy just to talk. Yeah. Talk it out. Don't hold anything back. Yeah. Just talk it out.
Well, in therapy, I mean, there's so many, it's viewed as it's bad, it's wrong. Like, oh, you have a problem, you have to go to therapy. But really, it's just somebody facilitating a conversation that maybe it helps bring out that communication between the two. And it's good.
Yeah, it is. Sometimes there's things that you don't want to say, or sometimes there's things that are hidden that you don't know until someone else tells you. That could help. But I say, marriage is not a word. It's a paragraph.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. It's tough.
Totally. Well, that was a super powerful conversation. Some key takeaways is just keep moving forward. You know, it gets better. There's a lot of...
Yeah, it gets better because they learn to live with the autism. It's not, like I said, it's not going anywhere. But they learn to live with it and they become better with it.
Yeah. Well, you're an amazing mom. Thanks for all your content and pushing it out there and helping other families. Where can people find you?
We just have an Instagram account, Daniela and Carmen on Instagram. Carmen and Daniela. Carmen and Daniela on Instagram. That's it. We don't have any other social outlets. But yeah, that's where they can find us.
Cool. And you'll definitely be motivated and blessed by all the content you're pushing out and just really making light of autism and showing that it's different but not less, and there's a lot of joys. And then even some, I mean, you post sometimes some of the hard things, which is real. And I
Yeah.
think that's what everybody needs to see, is it's real.
Yes.
So, right on. Yeah, this is the Unspecial Podcast. Thanks everyone for tuning in. And Carmen and Daniela, make sure to find them and follow along.
Thank you, Zach. Nice meeting you.
Yeah, you too.